Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Thursday, January 18th, 2018. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
It goes well, man. Thanks for having us.
It's always great to have you here. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, too.
It's great to have you here. And I just have to say, you know, I totally get that every single weekday at the last minute, I just grab two people and say, okay, here's the show and here's what we're doing. And I just appreciate that every time you guys are always game and you take the time out of your day to help make this happen. So thank you. I just want to let you know, I really appreciate that.
Actually, we just like hearing the sound of our own voices.
I'll take it as I can get it. the MacBook Air, it was introduced 10 years ago as of a couple days ago. And John, you had some thoughts on the MacBook Air, and I thought we should explore that a little bit. And specifically, I'm talking about the piece that you wrote yesterday, so it would have been on Wednesday the 17th. Mm-hmm. And you talked about how the MacBook Air has had such
changed the course of our mobile life.
Yeah. So
it was a rather whimsical piece.
Well, it was also nice because you have some great insight. So, what did you mean by it changed the course of our mobile life?
Well, it changed it in several ways. One was the ergonomics. Second was our wireless life, and third was how we felt being around other people who were using different kinds of computers. So there were lots of elements to this experience. I got to say, it's one of the great computers that Apple has ever built in its lifetime. When we first saw the MacBook Air, when it first was pulled out of the little mail stop envelope at Macworld San Francisco 2008, I was there. I saw him do it. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh my God, oh my God. I want this. It's sort of like the feeling I had when I first saw the iPhone in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then we found out it was $1,800. And if you wanted to add a 64 gigabyte SSD, 64, it was a lot faster, but not a whole lot of storage. You could, you know, throw in an extra $1,000. So, you know, with AppleCare and whatever, you're looking at $3,000 and completely beyond reason. It was for a long time. And of course, it only had one USB-A port.
And only so 2 gigs of RAM, as I recall.
2 gigs of RAM, that's right. It was roundly criticized. It didn't have Ethernet port. You had to use a little Ethernet to USB adapter, and people were complaining about how they had all their dongles, you know, hanging off of it. It was severely criticized as being overly expensive and too limited. And only wealthy businessmen who had Learjets could afford one of these. But it set the stage. Every year for a few years, it got better. Another USB-A port was added. The cost of the SSDs came down dramatically. By 2011, you could buy one with two USB ports and 128-gig SSD for about $1,300. So the prices really came down, and then it really flourished. And then everybody I know wanted one. Everybody I know had one. It had a backlit keyboard. It was beautifully thin. You'd sit on an airplane next to somebody with an IBM ThinkPad, and he had a little stupid red button in the middle of his big plastic clunker.
The pencil eraser.
You know, he'd look at you, and you'd be opening up a terminal window and doing Unix commands and running Microsoft Office. The version came out about that time. Mm-hmm. And the feeling that you had when you were around other people with this MacBook Air was that you were like a super extraterrestrial using something that had been brought back from the future. You were living in a different universe, a different world. Everybody else was running Windows, clunky black plastic Windows notebooks. The feeling you had was just incredible. And it made you feel good, and it made you feel happy to be part of the Apple community. You know, and I was watching the video, which I included in the article when Steve introduced it. Gee, I miss Steve Jobs' keynotes.
Wow. That was the keynote where he had the manila envelope and pulled the laptop out of it, right?
Yeah, I call it the mail stop envelope because it's got the mail stop lettering and it's got the little string tie and the little black red plastic loops to string tie the string to. Yeah. So
another thing that you said.
That was an incredible rollout.
It was, yes. So another thing you said in your piece was that this is a writer's dream. And Brian, you've been amazingly quiet. And I want to ask you, because I know you, and I know how much writing you do, not just for TMO, but when you're away from the news desk, do you agree, MacBook Air, a writer's dream?
I wrote my first novel on my 2011 MacBook Air in coffee shops, like, I don't know, probably 70-80% of it. And, you know, it was a great. It remains a great device. I just paid $129 to have it put a new battery in it, as a matter of fact, rather than getting a new one, because it remains a great writing device.
You know, we have the same vintage. We both have a 2011 MacBook Air, and we both have the 13-inch model, right?
Yeah.
And I did, too, for years, until I sold it to a friend and got a 2015 MacBook. Wish I still had it.
Yeah, I would probably buy a 13-inch MacBook Pro for my next laptop. Yeah. Also, I mean, I'm not planning on doing this in the next year, but all things being equal, based on today's standards, that's probably what I would do. But that's because the Air hasn't been updated significantly.
Yeah, I addressed that in the article too. Some thoughts about why it hasn't, and what is Apple's doing with it, and why it doesn't have a Retina display, and its applicability to education, and lamenting why the price hasn't come down more. What with economies of scale? I mean, it's been in production for 10 years. You would think that a machine that's been in production for 10 years would have a significant price reduction.
You would think, yeah.
Yeah, but look at the way Apple does product cycles. You typically don't get a price reduction, but you get more for the price you're paying.
And unless you're trying to go after the education market and failing miserably.
Okay, there is that.
Yeah, there's that.
So, John, would you agree with me that the MacBook Air is been like the test bed for Apple's other mobile devices, and it paved the way for what we have today with the current MacBook and MacBook Pro lineup?
Yeah, I think it set the stage for the current MacBooks and the technology of the MacBook Pros. Yes, it's sort of like the bar. You know, I mentioned at the end of the article that it was one of the great products of all time. Will Apple ever be able to achieve that kind of feeling again? I mean, the MacBook, even though it's a nice computer, still doesn't have that feeling. Maybe because the screen's a little too small at 12 inches. And maybe because it only has that single USB-C port. It just didn't strike a chord. Even in rose gold. Cough, cough. It doesn't, I know. It doesn't have that same magical feeling that the MacBook Air had in there a few years ago when it was in its prime.
Hold on a second. I need to edit something for you, especially in rose gold.
There we go. Got that fixed.
You're welcome.
So will Apple be able to repeat that feeling? That's the open question.
All right. So before we move on to something else, because I have a feeling you guys will both have some opinions on the other topic I want to hit. Considering we haven't seen an update for the MacBook Pro, or excuse me, MacBook Air for so long, and we have all these other products in Apple's mix now, do you still see a place for the MacBook Air? Do you think Apple is just like quietly taking it to end of life? Brian?
Hard to know. It's hard to know.
I'm surprised it's still sold. As neglected as it has been, I'm surprised that Apple still sells it. I don't understand why Apple still sells it. It doesn't have much of a price advantage over the MacBook. And it's outdated. No, it hasn't just been like the Mac Mini. Hasn't been. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to understand why the Mac Mini still sold too. It's actually the Mac Mini is embarrassing. The Air at least got a semi recent pseudo processor update.
Yeah, that's true.
I was talking to John Kirk yesterday, and we were wondering about this, and he was talking about how Apple often ruthlessly leaves old technology behind and moves relentlessly forward. And here's a edge case where they have not.
Right. And I mean, the funny thing is that the Air is still an attract. My 2011 device is still an attractive form factor.
But it only has 4 gig of RAM, right? Is that causing you problems with High Sierra?
No. High Sierra was a dramatic improvement on my Air. Improvement, night and day. As a matter of fact, that's high. If it wouldn't have been for High Sierra's performance effect on my Air, I would not have bothered replacing the battery.
Brian, I'm in the same position you are. My battery is at a point where, I mean, it still works, but it's too worn out. So I need to replace it. And if I hadn't put High Sierra on the computer, I wouldn't have even considered doing it.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah. So High Sierra was free, but ultimately it's going to cost me $129 because I'm going to have a new battery put in.
Can I put in a good word about High Sierra?
Sure.
I was having big time troubles with High Sierra's screensaver. I wrote about that. And it was the biggest problem I had because after running for a few hours, it would lock up my Mac really well. And it was any screensaver, not just the custom ones, but the built-in ones. And so I stopped using the screensaver altogether. I disabled it. And now I use lock screen, where it just brings up the user password and then it dims out for a while and probably goes to sleep. Mm-hmm. I had, over the holidays, I had an uptime of 22 days and 23 hours in High Sierra. So just simply by avoiding that, of course, it could be a problem with my Mac Pro that other people aren't having with their MacBooks, MacBook Pros, and other computers.
Well, consider you're renting a vintage computer.
Yeah. Wait, well, so the Mac Pro has always been a little dicey. But I got to say, High Sierra, since I solved that problem, has been a joy to work with.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm moving us on to another topic now, which is the Tim Cook spin machine, maybe? Or what I'm starting to think might be the Tim Cook gaslight machine. So here's the deal. You know, everyone's been up in arms about the whole battery thing.
Throttlegate.
Oh my God, Throttlegate. I knew it would come to a gate thing.
Eventually. You've been calling it Throttlegate for weeks.
Yeah, but I've been denying it because I haven't heard anyone actually say it out loud yet. But now you've said it out loud, and it's a real thing for me, so thanks for that.
Tim Cook says users didn't pay attention. Wow, what a way to open. Slam your customers.
Yes.
Well, also erroneously slam your customers. It'd be one thing if he was slamming his customers and it was true, but this is like the most untrue. This is by far the most untrue thing that I've ever heard Tim Cook say.
Okay.
I think it's the multitude of lawsuits. He went to the lawyers and he said, how should I approach this? And the lawyers said, blame it on the users for not paying attention. And then we'll deal with it in the lawsuits.
Oh man. I want to laugh, but you may very well be right. So in an interview with ABC, Tim Cook said that they told users what they were doing, but maybe we didn't pay attention. So he followed up a little while later in the interview by saying,
oh, wait, hold on. No, you didn't. And F you. that's super insulting. Especially, you know, after you did the work.
Brian, preparing. You're going to go to the good place.
What do you mean?
I get the joke, John. There's a TV show, The Good Place.
Okay.
Yeah. Tim followed up a little bit later saying maybe we weren't clear and then apologized for people thinking that they might have had some other motivation. Okay, so here's what I did. I went and looked at the article that, Brian, you wrote last January when 10.2.1 came out. And
that was the update that instituted,
yes,
the processor changes to mitigate battery issues.
Yes. Yes. So so you included a screenshot of the update screen from your iPhone. And the update screen says that the update includes bug fixes and security updates.
And yeah, it's one of the useless
right
patch notes.
So then I went over to Apple's knowledge base article where it's updated every time a new version of iOS comes out. So you get to see with each update what they've done. And typically there are more details there. And so I went and looked at the 10.2.1 notes there. And those notes had the exact same wording that was in your screenshot, but also included a line that said, it also improves power management during peak workloads to avoid unexpected shutdowns on iPhone. But it doesn't say anything else.
Not enough information. That's not us not paying attention.
Improves that's power management means slowing your iPhone down. That's an interesting euphemism.
Yeah, and how is the average user going to glean improves power management
mm-hmm.
to mean we're going to slow down your iPhone?
Yep.
So, I thought, okay, well, so there's a little bit more there, but I'm still not buying into Tim Cook saying we weren't paying attention, because first off, I would venture to say that most iPhone owners never look beyond that update screen for additional information about what Apple is doing with any update.
Well, it's because we expect Apple to take care of us. And when they say improves power management, we go, oh, how sweet. They're improving the state of my iPhone.
Yeah, but John, we haven't even gotten there.
Call my friend.
No one saw that. But what I'm saying is everyone.
I know, but if you did.
Yeah. So there was nothing about power management, the battery, anything in what the majority of iPhone users saw when they installed
it. The vast iPhone users saw. And even people that would go to the knowledge base, that knowledge base article, that slightly, you know, slightly more detailed release note doesn't actually explain what Apple was doing.
Right.
Well, the attorneys are going to have fun with that.
Yeah, Apple is going to lose those lawsuits.
I think it's very likely Apple is in a bind with this one for the lawsuits.
Yeah. Listen, Apple just plain screwed up here. And I mean, and you know, part of the issue here is that Apple, frankly, alone among tech companies at the very least, Apple has led the way in being clear about changes. Like, you know, for instance, changing the terms of service for say iTunes and then actually giving us, a detailed and easily understandable digest of what those changes include, right? That's something that Apple did wonderfully well, mm-hmm. and has led the way in being clear about things like that. So,
well, I can imagine a discussion, Brian, where the engineers are talking about how when the battery reaches 70 to 80% of its capacity, it's cooked. And that kind of meme is not going to go over with the average consumer who thinks of batteries as going from 100 down to zero in capability. So he probably said, rather than try to explain the engineering principles of the battery to the phone, we'll just take care of it and not bother the customer.
Yeah, that's probably.
I can imagine what.
Like, that's probably what happened. That was a mistake, yeah. Though. Mm-hmm. That was it was just plain a mistake. Apple needed to tell us what they were doing. You don't mess with the performance. You don't mess with the processor and speed of someone's device without telling them that you're doing it. To wit, these lawsuits. To wit, a criminal probe in France.
What did you call there?
Well, Force obsolescence is illegal. I don't think that's what Apple. I don't think that this is force obsolescence. I actually that just infuriates me because that's just wrong.
I'm with you. This is not forced obsolescence.
Briefly saw an article that suggested that the situation was more difficult in France because of the law there.
Fair. Well, yes, it is. And it will make it more interesting, but I still think that France is wrong to call it. I think anyone calling this force obsolescence doesn't understand what force obsolescence is.
Yeah, if anything, this is Apple pushing obsolescence farther away for a product.
It is, and it also wasn't because it was targeted towards devices that had a degraded battery and not all old devices. It's not forced obsolescence.
Right.
I can imagine the difficulty, for the sake of argument, in proposing to marketing how they would address this to the public had they taken a different course. It's fun to think about how Apple would have phrased its explanation of this process. That would have been an interesting challenge. Could they have navigated through it?
Of course they could have.
Explained it to us?
Of course they could have.
Yeah, and there would have been an uproar. And it would have faded away quickly.
You know, yeah, wouldn't have, I don't even know that there would have been much of an uproar.
Oh, there would have been, but it wouldn't have been like what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I think the crisis here is that Apple hid because they didn't think they could trust the customers to understand the engineering.
No, wait, we don't know specifically why they hid it from us. That is a potential reason, and it might even be a likely reason.
I'm hypothesizing. Yes.
Yes. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. But before we wrap up, I just want to ask both of you, because sometimes a reality check for myself is a good thing. Do you think I'm out of line by feeling offended by Tim Cook's responses to the battery thing in the ABC interview about how we maybe weren't paying attention?
No, so I think you were spot on.
I'm dramatically offended. Okay. I was much more rude about it than you were. So
you were, and I say that in a good way. You were.
Yeah, you said in the article that Tim comments felt disingenuous.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I let me do some editing. Is disingenuous. Derek, you're welcome.
Thank you. All right. Well, listeners, I'm curious, what do you think about all this? Let me know. You can send me an email, observations@macobserver.com. You can shoot me a message on Twitter. That would be @TMODaily. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes, and I will check all those places to see what you have to say. I'm curious how you're reacting to Tim's comments. So, with that, we really are out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having us. Good stuff.
Yes. And John, thank you for being here as well.
My brain is slowing down.
Time for a new battery and John.
Goodbye.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We will see everyone again tomorrow.